A very warm welcome to everyone into the online Dharma Hall here, and hope you're feeling well, doing well, settling in well. And it's really lovely to see you all, see those I can see, and just to kind of name it at the beginning, it's lovely to be able to see a few of you, but yeah, you're really welcome to be here in whatever way feels comfortable. So if you prefer to have your video off, that's really completely fine, welcomed. And if you're feeling like having the video on, or you already have the video on, or you can see the screen with the videos, we can just take a little moment at the beginning maybe to just have a little look around, see our Sangha, so our community here. And yeah, I really feel invited to use the chat to say hello. As we already have there in the chat, you can mention where you are, how it is where you are, how you're feeling, anything like that that feels helpful to do. Just take a moment to collect a few of those, widening our sense of who's here. Widening our sense of their sense of things. And say as those comments flow in, I'm tuning in from Dorset. And it's been a pleasant day here. Couldn't say it any other way. It's very pleasant conditions. I wish that those kind of pleasant and peaceful conditions were everywhere. And actually, that kind of brings me on to the second point of what I'd like to use the chat for, which is if you could, you know, turn the dials of experience for yourself or other beings towards more well-being, which is likely what we would do if only we could. Is there a particular dimension of that well-being you'll be interested in? I think for me, some sense of peacefulness, harmony. Is there something you'd like to see more of? And you can name it in the chat if you can, but you can also just think of it and hold it in our hearts. And I'll just name one or two of these. So we have wise kindness. Lovely cocktail to put together. Understanding and tolerance. Balance both within and without. Trust and hope. Yeah, there's a couples vibe thing going on. Things are coming in twos. Nice. Here we have one. That one strong one that can stand alone for sure. Compassion. World with more compassion. This being with more compassion. Really beautiful aspirations. And yeah, if you have others, feel free to put them in. But whatever they are, however they feel, we can have them in our hearts and minds as we move through this session together. So a little overview, the way it'll unfold here is we'll shortly go and have a half hour of meditation, relatively silent, relatively settling and softening in. And I'm going to drop in a few ideas into there, suggestions of ways that we can approach practice. And those are so that the reflection that I want to share, what I'm interested in exploring today, will make a little bit more sense from having a taste of that, getting us all onto the same page with that. Then I'm hoping that'll be relatively short and we'll have a good chunk of time for any kind of sharing, reflections, questions that you might have around this area of the teachings. So with those wishes, blessings in our hearts and our minds, let's feel what's going to be a good posture for this practice. Yeah, if that's what we're seeking to do, in what posture are we most well suited to doing that? And that's kind of a significant question. It's one that we should have quite a lot, because sitting is not synonymous with meditating. Yeah, some traditions use it that way. We had a sit. Yeah. But meditation, the process of cultivating, is posture agnostic. But sometimes what we're trying to develop is really supported by a particular posture. Yeah. If it's something that needs, so to say, standing up for, yeah, it might really support that kind of power. It's actually, no, I'm not going down there, I'm not going to do that. Or you're not going to get this past me. A clear, empowered position. It might be the surrender quality, actually, something to rest into. It might be reclining, yeah, really supports that. So anyway, enough about that. We can talk more about that later if that's that's news. Okay, choosing a posture that you feel supports the development of the qualities you want to see. And broadly speaking, I'll be suggesting bringing kind of a mindful attention to the breath or to the sounds. You can choose one of those, and you'll be kind of in key and step with what I'm sharing. But you can equally go more into a established compassion or loving kindness practice, whatever it is you feel drawn to do. So see if we can find the body, find a breath, or open the awareness into the sounds. And with a background sense of that intention, so if it's the kindness, what's it like to listen with kindness? What's it like to breathe or experience the breath with an attitude of kindness? Your particular intention doesn't translate across, maybe just turning it to kindness. Kindness will make a lot of sense and be a stepping stone in that direction for sure. So I'll be quiet for a while and let you make a more intimate, direct connection with your lived experience. around this point in a meditation, helpful just to notice if you're a bit tight, the tension build up, face, shoulders. So it'd be helpful to notice if actually kind of collapsed a little bit. Might be helpful to find some alignment sometimes. Might be leaning forwards. Helpful to see what would alignment look like. Maybe a bit to one side, the other, forwards, backwards. Could be how the head is resting or supported. You can also notice something about the breathing rhythm. Try breathing gently. See what that does. With the sounds, if we want to listen to more the distant sounds or the more quiet sounds, or more pay attention to what's obvious. In the same way, you can also start to notice, am I actually with my experience, or am I just passing my time? Do I need to get more interested? Or is it more like what we're doing, actually I need to actually rest into? Making a decision, trying things out. Is it possible to be more now? Less in the past, less in the future. Even this breath, this sound is taking a while. It could get more in tune with its dynamic wave nature. It's really coming close to life, coming to life, letting life come more alive. There's that intimacy and interest, need this nowness, thrive in this nowness. Once again, finding that level of intimacy and interest in the dynamic, the vibrations of sensations. Two aspects of inconstancy happening here, the breath in-breath, out-breath, and bits in between. It's very dynamic. It's not a constant thing. But it's also not a constant thing in that all of those breaths that have been breathed are gone, completely gone. How many breaths today? How many breaths yet to be? This one now we can bring to life, come to life with. And the same with the sounds. Everything is passing through, passing on, and released. Open, uncontracted way of meeting, a welcoming, a caring, and releasing. So letting the meeting now be tender, be gentle, be loving. Invite you to breathe gently, listen gently. And I'm going to read out through the last 5 minutes these 5 daily recollections. Things it is suggested to remember, to recall. And it really relates to how everything changes. Breathing gently, I lovingly remember this body is aging. Breathing gently, I lovingly remember this body is vulnerable to illness. Breathing gently. Breathing gently, I lovingly remember this body will die. Breathing deeply, breathing gently, I lovingly remember loss is part of life. Softening. Opening. Breathing gently, I lovingly remember to meet this moment with wisdom. taking a moment, opening, welcoming the sounds, the smells, the tastes, the tactile feelings, thoughts and emotions that are passing through. Breathing gently, we begin to transition from the practice to the communal space. Thank you for being here, and thank you to Caroline Jones, whose version of the five recollections I've borrowed to share here. There are the fruits of her own exploration of this teaching to find words that I think she said didn't hit her. You know, but more kind of tenderly opened her to the reality of life. Other versions can be a bit more, hey, it's like this, and this is actually a bit more like, this is what being human is about. And I really appreciate her work, her skill. She's a really dear person to me, you know, dear teacher of the Dharma as well. So if you are not familiar with Caroline Jones, you know, teaches at Guy House, teaches through Guy House, teaches also at the Forest Refuge of IMS. So yeah, she's someone to listen to. And that's actually the theme I want to speak to, is actually that there are these five daily recollections, things that we are encouraged to think about on a daily basis. And I've put Caroline's translation there in the chat, so you can check that out. And if you look for a talk on the five recollections by Caroline Jones, you can actually hear a bit more about the work, the process, the journey that went into finding those phrases. But I'll also share a bit more about those today, and more slightly more traditional versions of the phrases. And for example, the fifth one is actually relatively different in significant ways. But yeah, there's other things that we can say. So a little commentary around that, but also a bit of praise for the practice and its usefulness. But before we go into that, I just want to speak a little bit about participation. And just notice that Zoom uses that term, participants. So that we are, you know, this many participants in this session. And I'm actually going to record this locally and share it out. And you are a participant wherever you're listening in from. That we participate in what? Yeah, we actually participate in turning the wheel of the Dharma. Yeah, every practitioner is keeping these teachings alive through practicing them. Yeah. These are not, you know, kind of abstract theories. You know, you can't really. Well, actually, you can, can't you? You can study this like a university thing. You know all the answers to all the Buddhist questions or whatever, and get down the theory. But I think it was very much all the theoretical stuff. As another really dear teacher to me, Gregory Kramer, says, all of the teachings are practices. They're all practices. Things to practice. There are no, you know, just good ideas, and we can kind of have a book of good ideas, but actually they're things to bring into our life, into our practice. So all of us as participants practicing in this way are sharing the Dharma. What that also means is that we're all sharing in this together. So there's no like, well, you owe someone else. Like, we're all participants in the spread of this Dharma. So when we talk about participation, which is a translation of this Pali word dana, which is has its root in giving. So participants give to each other. Yeah, we also receive from each other. So we're giving and receiving all of the time. The better word for that, of course, is participation or sharing. We're sharing in the Dharma together. So there's nobody who owes anybody for anything here. Yeah, that's a debt mentality kind of language. I owe you one. You did this for me, I'll do that for you. You know, we can get into that. We can get into a debt mentality around kindness. Oh, that person was very kind to me. I must be kind to them later on. It's like, no. Like, being kind is happiness making. Yeah? You were the recipient of that kindness. You made somebody happy. They made you happy. There's more happy around. So what are you going to do? Well, you're obviously going to try and make someone else happy. Get them included in the circle. Yeah, so it's not a back forth. Look what I've done for you. Look what Gaia House has done for you. You know. As a Dharma talk is, you know, ask what you can do for Gaia House, what you can do for these Dharma teachers. No, it's a question of, so what are you going to do with these teachings, these practices? Yeah, I hope you feel inspired to share them, to think about them, to bring them alive, to keep them alive. So all of that within that framework, and also, great, you know, let's also support Gaia House. Let's also support those who come here to share in these sessions. Not because we owe them one, but because we want them to keep on doing it. Yeah, it's the paying it forward mentality of how this all works. Yeah, can't pay anyone back, but you can pay them forwards. You can, you know, probably couldn't stop Gaia House from putting on these sessions and somebody coming here to, you know, teach something, share something, because everybody who comes here just loves to do that. So. That's not the request, yeah. It's not, well, we were thinking of giving up because the Dharma is so poor. You know, I don't think those words, that sentence can formulate itself in that way. So, anyway, if you want to pay it forwards to keep this spinning in this direction, there are those things there. And equally, I trust that you know where your support can be best used in your life, in your ways, and follow that through. Yeah. So the idea of talking about the five remembrances started to come up. So it could be five remembrances, five recollections, five daily recollections, different names, meaning the same thing. It came up because I was teaching a week at, the competition for Gaia House is Sangha Live. So luckily, again, because of what I was just saying about Dana, there is no real competition there. As far as I understand it, we're all finding ways to share and spread this Dharma. It's a lovely organization, Sangha.live. And I did the last week's morning meditations around 7 a.m. And the theme that I wanted to do was called Liberating View. And we're exploring the change of perspective and a change of perception, the change of our view, which many of you might know as, you know, taking on the insight views of the three characteristics. So all things are inconstant. All things are unable to bring lasting satisfaction, partly because they're inconstant, but also there's deeper reasons. And there's also the view to take up that, you know, this is not self. This body's not self, this mind's not self, and there are various reasons to do that. I'm not going to go into all of that. If you're interested in that, or it's all kind of new, you can get the back recordings from that at sangha.live. But the thing is, when we came to this first view, this inconstancy, I wanted to keep it really relevant to people's direct experience. Kind of as we just did in the early part of the meditation, that making things dynamic, coming to life in connection to that, because I think that's really nice. Yeah. But I didn't want to kind of open it out into this whole side of aging and illness and death and loss and things like that. partly because it was happening at 7 a.m. in the morning, and also I couldn't actually see people there, and I didn't want to kind of go through all of that, but actually because we just wanted to take on this view, and it was much more about, like, if you change your view, look this way, what happens? Yeah, and we're more interested in that kind of freeing side. So when we see things as not lasting, not worth demanding on, getting attached to, it's not worth trying to make lasting happiness from non-lasting things, right? And you can find all that over there on that website. I just thought, it's really beautiful, really lovely way to practice. But what got me thinking about it and how I came to think, I'm actually going to do a session in the online Dharma hall on this, was it kind of feels like I was skirting around, and I think I found a relatively skillful way of skirting around it, the kind of elephant in the room, which is everything that we love, we're going to lose. Yeah, including everything about ourselves. It will not last. It will not last. And it's, you know, this is our situation, yeah. We don't get to keep things. And there can be a lot of investment into things and into beings that we love, we will lose, you know. Getting people into a space where we can really tune into that. You know, it's about loss of all we hold precious. Yeah. And, yeah, that can bring a lot of different emotions, and it's really wise to be sensitive to those emotions. And one of the things, like I said, I couldn't necessarily see the people there. Well, I couldn't see the people, I could only sense, and it's helpful to be able to see people's expressions as you're talking to them about these things, and also to be able to take the time. Here, I've got a much bigger amount of time in one block, yeah, to be able to, you know, set the scene, the inner and the outer. Yeah, so that first part of that meditation, and all this, the one of my favourite things about Caroline Jones's way of phrasing these phrases is this beginning that she has, breathing gently, I lovingly remember. Yeah, and that part is I think, you know, the greatest gift that she gives to these daily recollections. Yeah, you don't just leap in, I'm of the nature to grow old. Yeah. It's very different to introduce it in that way, set that scene in that way. But as well as the words, we can also spend some time with that practice. So aging, sickness, death can all be dukkha for us, can all be stressful, distressing, painful, unpleasant, unwanted. Yeah. And when that comes up, what's the correlation in our system? It's that tightness, it's that shutting down. It's that closed-heartedness. Okay? And the kind of question, does that make it better? Does it actually make, you know, being sick? Does it make being sick better to be more shut down? More aversive, more reactive? No, it doesn't. It doesn't actually make it better. It doesn't make it go away also. And so as meditators, we bring in these daily recollections and we bring them in as part of a practice. And I think that we combine them with understanding, well, what is it about this that really makes it hard to bear? And part of it is the contraction. And we can always turn the dial a little bit in the direction of less contracted. Yeah. We can also be skillful ourselves around, you know, how much to go into something or how much not to go into something. You know, I don't think it ever made one of the Buddha's lists, but I think that there can be wise distraction. Yeah, often we're kind of sound like we're against distraction. Mindfulness, presence, mind wanders, don't do that. You know, you've got to stay with stuff, especially if it's horrible. You have to stay with that stuff, especially, you know, just be mindful. Just got to pay attention. This is the way it is. It's like, well, no, it's not. That's not the entirety of the way it is. But sometimes I'm paying attention to other things, and we can choose to pay attention to other things at times. We have a negativity bias, Now, you have to own that. You have to understand that. Your attention will be drawn to the negative. Yeah. And that's why I wanted to be skillful in these morning sessions. Actually, we're not going to go there. We're not going to go to personal loss and death and illness and sickness and those kind of things. We're not going to go there. Like I didn't, you know, like the elephant in the room thing. I didn't go there. But it's a mixed bag. And each is a mixed bag. Everything we hold precious, we will lose. Yeah. And everything that is unpleasant also will not last. Yeah. It really is a mixed bag. Yeah. Like if your neighbour starts drilling, great. It's not going to last. Right. I mean, hopefully. I mean, eventually they'll run out of things to drill. They're going to have to start reconstructing at some point. Yeah. Or whatever it is. Like it, painful and pleasant, they don't last. Enemies, benefactors, they don't last. They don't last. Yeah. So anyway, kind of sidestepped it and wanted to own up to that and face up to it. And here we are together facing up to it. Yeah. So it's not just, you know, there's loss and we just got to bear up and get through it. And it's not just something to practice when we come into connection with it. Yeah. It's like, oh, my neighbor's dying. Oh, now I think about loss. Now I think about death a bit more. You know, or I am, or you know, someone dear to me has lost someone, and they're going through that process. Yeah, it's actually not just for occasional use. There's this tradition. There's this practice of daily coming to mind, mindfulness of our situation, our predicament of life. And, you know, there are many ways of holding this, and holding it well, I think, probably matters more than whether we do it or we don't. Yeah. You know, I don't know what it's similar to. Suddenly I was thinking, it's a bit like brushing your teeth. Is it a bit like, like, you know, you can brush your teeth mindfully or mindlessly. I sometimes brush them mindlessly and rub my gums away. Yeah. So, yeah, doing it or not doing it is important, and it is encouraged to do it. But probably doing it well is even more important. Okay, I don't know if that simile, metaphor works, comparison, analog, whatever. So we've had Caroline Jones's, and I'll read those again just so that we're familiar with those. But as I say, go back to the source, check out Caroline's explanation. So breathing gently, I lovingly remember, this body is aging. This body is vulnerable to illness. This body will die. Loss is part of life. And then breathing gently, I lovingly remember, to meet this moment with wisdom. Okay, wonderful. Really, really great. Really great. Here's Thich Nhat Hanh, who's also, you know, lovely, feels almost, you know, very accessible, maybe a little cuddly, cute, wonderful, humorous, and masterfully sharp, heart and mind, again, like Caroline. So Thich Nhat Hanh had this to say about the five remembrances. This might be just from my notes, so I'm not sure if this is word for word all from Thich Nhat Hanh, but this is the impression I got. When you deny the reality of life, you appreciate it less. When you deny the reality of life, you appreciate it less. Yeah? This is why we're doing this practice. Meditate on the Buddha's five remembrances and rediscover the magic of life. I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground upon which I stand. Okay, so there's a couple of things we could say are different about that. But first, I'll just repeat that last one. My actions are my only true belongings. Yeah, I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground upon which I stand. So maybe I can just put those into the chat as well, just so that you have them. Okay. It's good as we can do with the formatting. What we have here is this final reflection is actually a reflection about karma. Karma is to do with the activity that we do. If we were to look for a good description of like who are we on this path, we are beings that act. Yeah, we are entities that act. And we act in ways that cause harm, and we act in ways that heal and lead away from harm. And that's the core component of when we're on the path and when we're not on the path. Yeah, when we're acting in ways that harm, we're off the path, so to say. And when we act in ways that heal and resolve and release, then we're back on the path. And so this reflection is recognizing the importance of that. What I do matters. Caroline puts it shorter and very beautifully, to meet this moment with wisdom. Thich Nhat Hanh, I think, is truer to the original and also very clear about what's going on here. So if you want to pick this up as a practice, you could use either one of those. And at different times, you might find one or the other suits you better. I think they're both really, really, really beautiful. So if you were to tell someone, like, you might feel inspired to do this, you might not. That's, either way, it's fine with me. But if you were to tell someone that's what you did every morning, and they didn't also practice or were into this kind of thing, it might sound very dour and depressing. Yeah? And I was just thinking about it. Have you seen this film, The Matrix? I think it came out at the end of the last millennium, 1999. You know, when you kind of like, they wake up in this absolutely horrific situation. They were completely deluded, thinking they were living a life a bit like ours. But it's actually worse than that. They're in a nuclear winter. Machines have taken over, and you know, human beings in some dystopian sci-fi reality are, you know, just batteries or something like this. You know, something quite absurd. So, you know, they might think, every morning I just sit there and I say, I am of the nature to die. Oh, yes. Very, you know, depressing. That's my reality. That's what I think about. You know, why is it not depressing and dour and dark and horrific? Or is it? You know, but I would say it's not. And it's not offered to be like that. It's not. You have to remember, life is horrible. Life is suffering. And, you know, and then they take it all away. You know, I don't think that's what the Dharma teachings are saying, they're suggesting. I think it's more like we're in a mirage when we're not in tune with this. Yeah, we're seeing a mirage, you know, that apparition of water in a desert. And these sayings actually bring us to an oasis. It's something quite weird there. It's like landing on the ground and relating to what is truthfully known. Right? Because it's not like anyone here is saying, well, no, hang on, check your facts. That's not true. Yeah, it's not like, oh, I think you'll find it's not like that, you know. So no, we all know it, but if we're not thinking about it on a daily basis. It's like we're kind of trying to avoid the truth in a dependently originating world. Yeah. Just doesn't make sense. You know, I was actually listening to a program recently with Tim Harford, who does the he's a Radio 4 presenter, talking about a time in Stalinist Russia where they were refusing to listen to the facts of like how their projects were going on, right? Refusing to count all of the people who are actually dying, you know, of starvation and famine and all these things. And because they refused to take that information, they couldn't make any progress through their development because they weren't actually receiving back any data on their existence. Or if it's something similar, you know, it's like once we start to avoid truth, the whole thing collapses. So the fundamental importance, I mean, thinking about this more and more on the path, like I came here looking for truth, but I'm more and more realizing it's actually about truthfulness. Living a life of truthfulness, living a life of honesty and integrity. Yeah. This is how it is right now. On this plane of existence, coming to life includes opening to our death and loss. And others' deaths, other losses, illnesses, all of this. And I think that practicing this way actually starts to support a kind of a faith in ourselves, a faith in our capacity. I think it strengthens something. And actually, just before coming in, this final example from me is I was remembering, I've heard this story such a long time. Do you know the story of Ajahn Chah and the crystal glass? Somebody gave Ajahn Chah this crystal glass, beautiful, beautiful crystal glass. And he said that when he received it, he thought, this is already broken. It's already smashed. And I can't remember if it does smash in his experience, but he's like, and I'll be ready. The day that it falls off the desk, you know, it's accidentally nudged off when I'm reaching for my pen, I won't be disappointed. But every day that it's still there, I'll be happy. And I'll look at it and it's beautiful. I love it. Yeah, I really appreciate it. And it's the same tune of what Thich Nhat Hanh was saying. When you deny the reality of life, you appreciate it less. And so it's also there, not just come to your senses, you know what it's about. It's actually about mudita. It's actually about appreciation. It's about taking joy in this. Yeah. Because whatever is going on, you're actually not dead yet. Yeah. And you've got actions to do today. You've got a lot of actions ahead of you. Yeah. Even if you go, you know, if you're heading on your way to bed, there's a lot of actions to get there. Yeah. Or you're already in bed. Still a lot of actions to do. My actions are my only true belongings. We will be remembered for what we do. Yeah. By someone, some way. And all of that, as I say, is meaning to get faith in ourselves. Or we could use a more kind of everyday language because faith can feel a little religious. Faith in ourselves, faith in the practice, confidence in oneself and assurance. Strengthening our capacity to hold to life. Strengthening our capacity to meet this in different ways. And that's what it means to be living in a dependently originating world. How are you going to meet that? How do you hold your death? And do you want to hold it in different ways? And I think that that is what brings us the confidence in the teachings. Our view of ill health, of growing old, of dying, of loss, of the karma of our actions. Yeah, the view we have of those, the way we relate to those matters. Yeah, this is dependent origination, including more, knowing it's possible. Yeah. So, yeah, some of you will be familiar with the daily remembrances, daily recollections. Some of you may not be. I would say, give it a spin for a week. Yeah, just try it on. Doesn't take so long to do. It can be combined with a regular practice. Might be helpful to do it at the end of a period of practice. Might actually be helpful to do it at other points of the day. Yeah, not connected to your practice. Might be helpful to do it before practicing. But yeah, I'm interested if there's anyone here who does do this on a regular basis, wants to share anything about that. or any other thoughts and feelings, reflections from you. Yeah, we have a bit of time for that now. So yeah, over to you. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I think just hearing you kind of sharing it in that way, just thinking about so, reflecting on death, you know, moment to moment, inhalation, exhalation. Maybe this is the last exhalation, you know, and you know, this might be it. This is, I'm preparing for death in that way. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think. Are you meaning that it would be complementary or contradictory? Is your instinct around that? Which also reminds me a little bit of the question that was asked, I think, of the Dalai Lama or something, you know, on his 50th birthday. Like, what are you going to do now? And he's like, prepare to die. And then giggles and, you know, goes off to do it. So, it can be, again, same, sounds dour, sounds depressing, but it can be really, you know, good and good practice, because that is going to be one of the most significant moments in our existence, the one of dying. So practicing it in advance feels really helpful. And here it feels less about, it feels kind of more like holding that truth than necessarily kind of practicing it in that way. But I was thinking, and you probably know about this, is like when you put a list together, what you put at the front of the list or at the end of the list is kind of like quite an important thing. And that it comes down through this whole list is like, what are you going to do? How are you going to act? In the light of this, like, you know that's true, you know that's true, you know that's true, you know that's true, you're going to lose everybody. But have you actually thought about your actions? It's your actions that really matter. And so that just kind of occurred to me as you were saying that. And I think that, yeah, that's kind of interesting. So that's the kind of, the concluding paragraph is like, as Thich Nhat Hanh puts it, my actions are my only true belongings. Yeah. Or as Caroline says, the key thing, meet this moment with wisdom, all of your wisdom. Yeah. And that feels like it's got a different instruction than what you were saying about the, I'm going to die. Out breath. Yeah. And of course, perhaps some of you are already doing it, is you can just be repeating them to yourself as there's a kind of a pause in a conversation or something. It's just, you can just say, I'm of the nature to ground, or whichever one. And you can, of course, take just one of the five and just kind of chew on that for a while. Yeah, you could do Monday through to Friday with a different one. Also, really work with it in those ways. And then when you're more familiar, do the whole combo of the fullness. But yeah, Tilly, I'd like to hear your reflections, comments. Yeah. So, yeah, really, really beautiful sharing and reflection there. And as you were sharing it also, you know, when you were saying, you know, how a lot of the material there actually feels very close, you know, and relevant to your life, and whether you're actually using these as phrases or concepts or areas to kind of explore, it's kind of feels very present and pertinent and uncertain. Yeah, the uncertainty of it, you know, and they use that phrase in Zen a lot around kind of the certainty and the uncertainty. Yeah, death is most certain, the time of death is most uncertain. You know, sickness is most certain, the time of sickness, the day of sickness is most uncertain. And that, you know, those two dimensions going together, really key. And before I respond to what you were just sharing there in relationship to the kind of the fifth daily recollection, I also just wanted to say, I think about these things in, you know, this is how my mind goes. It's like, is that complete? Is it five? You know, is that enough? Is there something else to recollect that we're not recollecting in there? So it kind of like that can be another kind of just question to have in the field as we carry on with our sharing some reflections. Is there something else that you would think to reflect upon that's actually not there? Rather than like we just take the teaching as a total thing that we accept or and then follow, or anyway, we can improvise on it as Caroline does. So yes, this fifth area actually brings with it, it probably brings with it this word responsibility. Yeah, we have a responsibility to meet our experience with wisdom. We have a responsibility to recognize that our actions have impacts. Yeah, I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. And that can feel really heavy. Yeah. And it might particularly feel heavy because, as you say, you know, you're actually really tuned in to the other recollections, which also have a heaviness to them. Yeah. And maybe they don't feel so heavy in reference. But it's interesting, I think, in terms of, you know, kind of going back to the Pali Canon Buddha and kind of getting a sense of like how they talk and what they're up on about, is like there's a lot of actually striving and working hard and really digging in and facing up to and bearing through and all of this kind of language in there. And I think that the modern Dharma, sensibly actually, has kind of not used that language so much. So it has a much gentler tone, which I think supports accessibility to the teachings. But I think this is one of those teachings that does start to point a little bit more in that direction, which is, yeah, there's work to do and there is a real responsibility to make sure that we're not causing harm. That we're not causing harm to ourselves and we're not causing harm to others. Yeah. And I think that that should probably make us feel a bit uncomfortable. Is that, gosh, yeah, but I'm actually a human being who has unwholesome desires or, you know, has reactivity, has all of these things. And I think the last thing I'll say about that is I was reading a book about the paramis. Some of you know these qualities. They're very, very kind of beautiful, bountiful qualities. And I think it's from a book called Crossing the Floods or something like this by Ajahn Suchito, S-U-C-C-I-T-O. Or it might misspell that. And apologies to Ajahn Suchito. But they were saying something actually around the quality of honesty. So again, I think this is really tuned into a quality of honesty, truthfulness about our experience. And that is, when we have honesty, we also need to have humility. Yeah, and we also have to include within that, I didn't choose. There's a little bit of the anatta quality, the not self quality there, is that I didn't choose to hurt this person. I didn't choose to harm in this way. I didn't choose to be greedy or I didn't choose to be easily annoyable. Yeah, I didn't choose to grow up in the family that I grew up in or develop these traits or these other kinds of things. Yeah, and that's helpful to have that available to us while we're practicing with this. Yeah, but also it's really helpful to have this lens and a sense of responsibility. So anatta actually is the freedom to take on a view of self and a view of not self. It's actually the teaching, the capacity to be able to do both. Yeah, we could talk about more about that within that. But I think that those are some ideas of like how we might hold this. Is that, yeah, it's important to try and get it right. But that can easily morph into, I mustn't get it wrong. And those are not the same movement. Yeah, I really want to get it right. But I mustn't get it wrong. It's not the same vibe. And one of them is very contracted and rigid and difficult to be with. But like one is an aspiration and one is a control mechanism. And finding our way through that is a really helpful way. And I think that's what I take from Crossing the Floods. Yeah, I'm sure that can be included within it, this idea of, you know, relaxing and, you know, doing your best and things like that. And I think that those might be the helpful way forwards. I think they, for sure, they would be helpful reflecting backwards and having to kind of, oh, okay, I accept I screwed up and I apologize and I hope that they accept it. And if they don't, I accept that they can't accept it right now. But before doing it, relaxing might be helpful, but it might also not be helpful, and it would depend on you, you know, really depend on you. But it's kind of like, we are actually attempting to do something that's very difficult, you know, like people who pole vault or something like that, you know, like they go with that pole and they stick it in the ground, they go really high and then they throw themselves over, and it's like, we're attempting to do something really remarkable, to not harm, to not demand. You know, these are not, the Buddha hesitated from offering this teaching, not because it was so complicated, but that it's actually really difficult to do, to really live without thirsting, demanding, aversiveness, all of this. And so kind of just relaxing may not work. You know, it may actually require real precision at times. So, yeah, I don't have a one-word kind of prescriptive thing. And as I say, you know, the Buddha, you know, would say, practice like your hair's on fire. Yeah, he would say that more often than practice like you're getting into a really lovely bath. Yeah, I think we can do both, yeah, at times. But, you know, I can't say you could just summarize it as this. I think if you say, my actions are my only true belongings, and if I really act that way, then yeah, sure, sometimes relaxation, sometimes really coming forwards. Yeah, same thing about what I said earlier about posture. Yeah, if we only ever sit, or we only ever, whatever posture it is, yeah, we want to have a variety of those postures because they all make a difference. So a variety of ways of practicing as well. Yeah. So I hope that's a helpful pointer in the right direction. But yeah, it's probably worth, as you say, if the other four of the five reflections feel already quite present, could just be interesting to have, you know, that one reflection and bring it into being. Yeah, great. Is manifestation meaning to like have a positive, like positively imagining what's going to happen helps to manifest it in that way? Or does manifestation mean something else? I don't know if I know the word. Sure. That's a really interesting question. I don't know if I'm qualified to kind of be able to give you a very thorough answer, and also like what the Buddha said about these kinds of things. But it sounds like it's quite connected to this kind of fifth recollection, which is actually our actions are what come through us. Sometimes this phrase of action is used as an equanimity phrase, which is all beings are heirs of their karma, of their actions. Yeah. And it's kind of included there in the daily recollection as well. And so it's to encourage a sense of equanimousness, which is a very hard word to translate. And we don't tend to use it every day in our language and say, you know, I was very equanimous at the market today, or, you know, and then I was on my bike and I was very equanimous about the driving of other people. It's like either we were annoyed or we were not bothered. Yeah, and so it's a very difficult quality to get a handle on. So I appreciate I'm bringing in the last minutes a phrase that really needs a whole session to open to. But if we say like an equipoise through life in relationship to loss and to gain, that we don't get too grappling and antagonistic. What the teaching seemed to come down to is like really take care of your activity, and your activity is your speech and your thoughts and what you do, yeah? But it's actually also what you choose to pay attention to and the way that you choose to pay attention to it. And so those aspects are very, very subtle. And I think they're the kind of like the hidden level of these teachings that we may not immediately realize that we're actually paying attention in a certain way right now. And that can be changed. And it can be changed towards the non-harming, towards the delighting in, the appreciating of what's good here, you know, or of generosity or gratitude, yeah, for what's actually happening here. And those things manifest our world, Yeah, our world is our experience, and our experience is dependent on what we pay attention to and how we pay attention to it. And so that's how I would kind of come back and say, that's what these teachings are about. Yeah. And we are the recipients of our past actions, and we're also the direct recipients of our current actions, of what we pay attention to and how we pay attention to it makes our experience, makes our life. Okay, so yeah, thank you. So I think that's going to be the final kind of point here, but I do recognize that there's a question in the chat there of like, can you point towards these teachings about past actions and shame? Shame is often used as kind of a negative term, but relates to what we might call conscience. Yeah, and it is right that we want to strengthen our conscience. I don't think we want to wallow in our shame. Yeah, so it's one of those middle way qualities. So we don't say, well, past actions are past, they don't matter. Yeah, it's not, well, it wasn't me, there's no me, there's no, you know, I'm not in charge of this body and mind, it just does what it wants, you know, I can't take ownership of that. But we don't also want to kind of go into shame. And really finding that middle way of actually supporting our conscience, building our assurance, confidence in ourselves, that if I go wrong, I will apologize. And that builds and strengthens our character. And it also supports and encourages us to deepen our understanding of what we can do with these teachings and practices. So short answer for now, but yeah, let's open to that in the future. I think it's a really important, special area. Okay, thank you everyone for being here. Really take care of yourself and those around you. Many of you will probably already know, but there's going to be a peace vigil on Sunday evening for those who would like to be there for that, 7 o'clock UK time. Take care.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.